Good morning, everyone, and welcome to a Sunday special edition. We're going to start off with a convention commercial this morning. Jen A. is here to tell us all about it. Good morning, Jen.
I've got the power!
Well, good morning, a vision for you. Are you in need of a power? Join us for a weekend of inspiration, education, motivation, and fellowship. It's the Power of the Big Book, and it's back. November 7th through the 9th, 2025, at the Marriott Newark International Airport Hotel in Newark, New Jersey, experience a transformative event hosted by A Vision for You Big Book Study. This is your opportunity to discover how the 12 steps can bring real and lasting freedom from the bondage of compulsive overeating. You're going to hear directly from those who have recovered as the Big Book is brought to life through shared experience and powerful teaching. So don't hesitate to claim your seat today. Register now at A Vision for You Info. That's www.avision4you.info. We can't wait to see you there.
Thank you, Jen. Good morning once again, everyone, and welcome to a Sunday special edition of A Vision for You. My name is Leah M., recovered compulsive overeater from New Jersey, and your moderator for this morning. Today is Sunday, June 15, 2025. The share ID numbers for Friday, June 13th, are the following. For the 7 a.m. Eastern Big Book Study, 22,523, that's 22523. And for the 10 a.m. Eastern Big Book Study, 22,524, that's 22524. This morning, A Vision for You presents, it's summertime. What's the question? We come to Overeaters Anonymous as a result of the pain and frustration we experience in our disease of compulsive overeating. We felt despair trying every diet and used many methods to control our compulsive overeating without success. We could not enjoy life because of our obsession with food and our weight. We could not stop eating too much, even when we really wanted to. We felt shame and humiliation about our behavior with food. We simply cannot solve the problem by ourselves. We come to Overeaters Anonymous looking for a way out, a solution which will free us from the bondage of our affliction, free us from the pain, free us from the frustration. The Big Book was written as a set of directions for doing the 12 steps quickly and effectively. It's not a book of theory or philosophy. The Big Book isn't just a piece of literature. It's a living guide to a practical process of change. It offers a clear step-by-step approach for your recovery. It enables us to really and fully understand the twofold nature of the problem. It presents a clear, practical solution to our problem, and it shows us how to implement that solution through the 12-step program of action it describes. The 12 steps, as outlined in the Big Book, represent a process of spiritual awakening, a personality change sufficient to overcome compulsive overeating. Joining us today to share his experience and respond to your questions is Harlan G., a recovered compulsive overeater from Arizona. Harlan is a loyal and beloved servant of Overeaters Anonymous, a member of Vision for You, dedicated to eagerly and enthusiastically carry the message of recovery around the globe. It is always a privilege and always a pleasure to welcome Harlan G. to the line. Good morning, Harlan.
Good morning, Leah. Thank you so much. I'm so honored and thrilled to be here this morning. Happy Father's Day to all dads. It's just a wonderful blessing and a wonderful privilege to be here. I'm just going to go into a very short description of who I am. I've been in OA since February of 1979, February 2nd, 1979. I have been a compulsive overeater from the second I was born. I have very, very vivid memories of doctors and teachers and people, adults in my environment, yelling and screaming at my mother and father about why are that you letting him eat this and why are you letting him get so fat. And I remember very, very distinctly when I turned about 5 or 6, people started screaming directly at me, why are you getting so fat? And I got this message from the world, and the message that I got from the world was, you are unacceptable the way you are. Because you are fat, you are existentially unacceptable the way you are. If only you would acquiesce to our demands and use your unaided willpower, you would lose weight and then be okay. But in the current state that you're in of being a fat kid, you are unacceptable. And when I was 9 years old, I was put on diet pills by a doctor. When I was 10 years old, I was put on different diet pills because some of the information started coming out. I was re-put on diet pills at 14 and 15, and that was hell on earth as well. By the time I was a senior in high school, I was 335 pounds. I'm one of the few people I know that is a little over 110 pounds less than I was when I was a senior in high school. I'm a little over 110 pounds less than that today. By the time I graduated college, I was about 600 pounds, and I was to reach about 700 pounds by the time the onslaught of this disease was over. The shame and humiliation, the alienation that I felt at the hands of this disease were unbelievably traumatic. I have been through trauma as the result of this disease. I have been through being an object of ridicule. When I would go in public, children would laugh at me. Adults would laugh at me. On many occasions, people would go out of their way to humiliate me. On several different occasions, people took food off my table in restaurants and gave it to the busboy saying, he's too fat, he doesn't need this, and I didn't even know who these people were. I had no idea who they were, and I had to pretend that it didn't bother me because I had to live in a world where if you're fat, you are automatically incorrect, you are automatically wrong. No matter what you think, no matter what you do, if you're overweight, you cannot have a brain because if you were smart, you wouldn't be fat. I went through periods where I broke furniture. That was humiliating. I couldn't get in and out of a car. I didn't wear underwear. I had towels shoved between layers of flab to keep the fat from rubbing against each other to do the best I could to try to minimize the effects of contact dermatitis. I have had numerous health problems as the result of my extreme morbid obesity. I went on my first date with a girl when I was 35 years old. I was completely physically and emotionally emasculated by this disease at a very early age. February 2nd, I came in 1979, and currently I have 26 years of blissful, beautiful abstinence. And you can do the math yourself. But I have 26 years of recovery, and I have a life beyond my wildest dreams. There is pain in my life. I have suffered loss. This year has been particularly tough for me. I was very much in love with somebody who was very much in love with someone else, and they chose that other person over me. And that was very devastating to me. I was very, very attached to a couple of my friends who have died this year, including the 93-year-old woman who was like a surrogate mom to me, and she was the one that brought me to my first meeting back in 1979, along with a lady by the name of DM, who has since gone on to the big meeting in the sky as well. They were the ones that brought me to my very first meeting, and I have had a very dear friend of mine, the person who was the best man at my wedding. He had a massive heart attack. He's still alive, but things are not good there. So I've had a lot of loss this year. This has been a very tough year for me. But I have not found it necessary, nor have I even entertained the thought of eating extra food. I walk 3 miles a day, 6 days a week. I've lost a little over 500 pounds since the worst of the days, and I have a life that is worth living. I have friends. I have people that love me, and I love them back. I am a member of Overeaters Anonymous, and I wake up in the morning, and there is a purpose and a rhythm that underlay all. I am here for a reason, and that reason is to spread the word of the recovery, to sponsor, to be sponsored, to be a part of this fellowship is the greatest honor. And I have spoken all over the country. I have spoken in Jerusalem, Israel, Anchorage, Alaska, San Diego, California, Cape Cod, Massachusetts, and most points in between those areas. This has been an amazing, amazing life for me, and I love it. And I never thought that these words would ever cross my lips. But today, I am a grateful compulsive overeater. Do I wish I could have the pain back that led me here? Absolutely not. But the joy in giving, the joy in living. Today, I try as best I can not to live to recover, but to recover to live. And with that, you've got my statistics. This is who I am. Let's throw it open, Leah, for questions and answers. There's two types of questions, though, I don't want to answer. One is math. I'm terrible at math. Don't give me any math problems. Number two, I won't answer any specific food questions because what you can eat is not what the person next to you can eat, and what I can eat could be different from the way you eat. So let's not do specific food questions or math questions. That aside, Leah, let's throw it open and let's get to it.
All right, Harlan, thank you for your profound and inspiring message of depth and weight this morning. Thank you so much. Harlan's contact information will be given at the conclusion of this recording, so do stay tuned for that. We will now open it up to a question and answer segment. Instructions, once again, no math questions, no questions that are specifically related to food, his food plan, etc. Okay, star one to unmute. I need your name, including the first letter of your last name. Plenty of time.
Marion H.
Marion H.
Polly D.
Polly D.
Melinda H.
Melinda H.
Larry.
Great opportunity. Hey, Larry. Great opportunity to get any clarification you need. Go ahead. More names, please.
Have a beautiful, blessed, abstinent day.
Anyone else want to get in on
R.
Gotcha, Hanayeta. Anyone else?
Kelsey R.
All right, well, let's. Chelsea R.
Chelsea with a K.
Merritt.
Thanks.
Merritt W.
Is that Mary W?
Merritt, like the badge. W. I should just say it like that moving forward.
Thank you, Merritt. Got it. Thank you so much. Okay, we have Marianne H., Polly D., Melinda H., Larry K., Hanayeta R., Chelsea R., and Merritt W. Once again, no math questions, no food plan questions, and one question, please, each person. Thank you. Let's get started. Marianne H. Star one to unmute, Marianne.
Good morning. This is Marianne H. Can I be heard?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, good morning, Harlan. Thank you so, so very much. I had the privilege of being at the very first convention that was held. I don't remember when, but it was in Newark, New Jersey, in Marriott, and you were wearing a suit, and you were a little bit chubby, but you were one of the speakers, and I had the privilege of being in, there and listening to you and talking to you on the phone one-on-one. My question is, I've seen you online because I know you have your own everyday meeting. How much do you weigh now, if I may, if you would like to tell me? If not, it's okay too.
I weigh 223.4 pounds.
Wow, that is amazing. Harlan, you're an inspiration.
Is there another question in there, Marianne? I appreciate the effusive praise, but in the interest of time, is there a question?
No, that's it. Thank you very much. God bless you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Polly D., your question, please.
Hello, everyone. Good morning. Harlan, thank you. So, believe it or not, whenever I've heard you talk about the shame, about your body, your relationship with food and all of that, I relate. And I've only been 20, 25 pounds maybe overweight over what I am now. And I swing both ways. I've been a restrictor and I've been underweight. So could you, sometimes I get in my head, especially as a sponsor, that like my experience isn't good enough, especially if someone has 100, 200 pounds to lose. Could you give us some of your experience with people who don't have the dramatic consequences of our disease as you have, as much physically? Help to bridge that for me so that I can feel that my experience matters too and I can be helpful to people. What are your tips?
No matter who you are never going to rise above the level of a human being. And as a human being, your experiences are going to be uniquely yours. There are areas of life, Polly, where you have had much more trauma than I. I may have had a very visible amount of trauma because I was this weight or I was that weight or I was whatever I was. But the bottom line is there are areas of life where if I sat down and I actually spent some time with you, you may have been married to someone who was highly physically abusive. You may have had a father that was alcoholic. I never saw my dad take a drink of alcohol in his entire life. He just wasn't a drinker. He just didn't do that. Maybe you had this experience that I didn't have. Nobody gets in here on a roll. Nobody comes in here because things are good. We don't have to qualify. We are qualified by the fact that we are compulsive overeaters and we are in qualification to be a sponsor is to have had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps and to carry the message to compulsive overeaters. That is what qualifies you to be a sponsor. This is not a compare and despair situation. The shortest distance between me and miserable moods is through comparison. When I start to compare myself to other people, I am always going to come up short. So the shortest distance between me and despair is through compare. And if we are going to continue to compare ourselves to other people, we are always going to doubt ourselves. You have your story. You have your hell that you went through. You have your path to get you through to OA. And it is not my path, and my path is not your path. You share you, I'll share me, everybody else share them, and we'll let God, in his infinite wisdom, put us together with the people that need to hear that message. There is some reason that God brought you here, and he didn't bring you this far to drop you in Lake Michigan now. He brought you this far so that you could be of maximum service to him, God, and the people about you. So use your story. Forget about my story. Forget about Leah's story. Forget about Larry Kay's story or Hana Yetta's story or anybody's story. You tell your story. And in telling your story, you will become an instrument of God's love to someone else. And to someone who is suffering, someone who is in the disease, someone who cannot find their way out of the morass of this disease, the self-pity, to that person, to the world, Polly, you're a person. To that person, you can be the world. You can light them up because there is something in your story that they will identify with, and they will say to themselves, as millions before and after them will have said, if she can recover, I can recover too. So forget about compare. You just tell your story. You be who you are. I hope that helps, Polly. Thank you.
Thank you, Polly. Melinda H., your turn.
Yes.
Hi, thank you. Thank you very much, everyone, for being here, and Harlan for being our guide today. What suggestions do you have for someone who has been in program for decades, abstinence a number of times, but invariably gets to a place, a point somewhere in the steps, and picks up again?
Okay. That sounds like dieting with group support to me. And I hear this every day of my life. Without exaggeration, I must hear this phone call every day of my life. And the phone call goes like this. You need to work the steps. I've already worked the steps. I've worked them with this person. Well, here is the difference. First of all, let me start off by saying, Melinda, I sympathize with you, but if I want different, I have to do different. And that means I have to work the steps, I have to work them quickly. But here's the kicker. I have to keep working them. And there is prelapse and there is relapse. And if I've never really been in recovery, I can't relapse. So I don't know enough about what's going on with you. I don't know if you're just hunkered down on willpower or what, but I'll cover both of those things. There are a lot of people that come into Overeaters Anonymous, and they never really give up their allergic ingredients or their allergic foods. What they do is they hunker down on unaided willpower, and they make a pretext at working the steps, but here is what is not happening. They are not living in 10s, 11, and 12s. When I say 10s, 11, and 12s, what I mean is multiple 10 steps a day because things are making you mad, things are scaring you, and when you stand in that boxing ring with your fists up trying to defeat the food thoughts, you are going to get flattened every time. So if we're not doing 10s, we're not doing 11, and we're not sponsoring other people, then we are ignoring the symbol of Alcoholics Anonymous. The symbol of Alcoholics Anonymous is an equilateral triangle. Not bad for somebody that sucks at math. An equilateral triangle that represents recovery, fellowship, and what's the third leg of it? I'll come back to that in a second. Let me just look it up here in my book. The third leg of it is unity. But it's encompassed by something else that we ignore, a circle, a circle. The circle is an ancient symbol of perpetuity. We have to continue to work the steps, and that's where people get into trouble. They don't continue to work the steps. What they do is they treat it like a diet. They come in here, they lose some weight, they get down to a decent weight, or they get down to a weight that they'll accept, and they stop doing the program. So, of course, they're in prelapse. Prelapse is they're not following through with the steps. As such, eventually they're going to pick up food. So, again, if I want different, I have to do different. And that means a food plan, an examined food plan to make sure there are no allergic ingredients in that food plan. And if there are, I do not eat those things. Number two, a new start, a new sponsor, a new start, a new big book, a new attitude. And third, and this is the biggest one, constant review of the food plan, because food plans must change over time. I'm 71 years old. If I went back to eating the way I ate when I was 65 years old, I would gain massive amounts of weight in leaps and bounds. But what you've described is the urge to eat has never really left you. So that tells me you're dieting with group support. You have to come to this program like it's a swimming pool. Jump in. Sit all the way down. Come all the way in. Sit all the way down. And as our friend in Massachusetts says, surrender. Surrender to the program. Stop what you're doing. If you want different, you have to do different. And change is in the air. If you change nothing, nothing will change. But this is a very pivotal question that you're asking. I get asked this question literally every day of my life from people. Sometimes they're crying, sometimes they're not crying, but I get asked this question. Melinda, the bottom line is you have to change what you're doing. And if you don't change, nothing will change. I hope that helps. Thanks.
Thank you, Melinda. Larry K., you're up.
Yeah, thanks so much for your service. Appreciate it. Harlan, appreciate you.
Thanks,
one of the things I was curious, yeah, hi, is so you've become, you know, over the many years, a student of history, which many of us appreciate and have learned from that. And I wonder, you know, from your perspective, what, like, because I know it's not necessary, perhaps, to become a student of our history back in the early AA days and throughout the evolution of AA and then OA and so forth. But can you tell me the importance of the history of our fellowship, particularly going back to AA, and what that's meant to you and why that's important, if you feel it's important?
It's not necessarily a requirement of recovery. There are people who are in beautiful recovery that we hear on the line every day that have a message of hope and strength and experience who do not study or expound on the history of AA or the history of OA. For me, it became a passion because it was something that I am interested in. So I read a lot of things. I read the history of the Oxford Group. I read a lot of books about the history of AA. And sometimes it's a little maddening to me when certain things happen or certain passages of the big book are read. Like the other day, we read the passage about hatred of alcohol. And unless you really are into the situation that these men were born into, where temperance was the rule of the day, the Women's Christian Temperance Union, and prohibition had just passed, you know, from us, you really don't get a sense of what they're talking about. What do you mean? How could you hate food? Well, these guys lived in a very different world. So for me, the history of AA and the history of the men and women who formed AA and who were in AA enhances it for me. It is not a requirement. It is not anything that anybody has to do to recover. There's no requirement in the steps that says you must learn the history of the Oxford Group. You must learn the history of, you know, all these various things. There's no requirement for it. For me, it enhances it, and it makes it more precious to me. And for some people, they couldn't care less. I've been criticized, right, on the vision line. People have said, we don't need the history lecture. We don't need the history of it. For me, it's important. For others, it's not. The only thing that's important really is that we recover. The only thing that's important is that we work the steps and pass on what we've learned to the next person. That's all that's important. I love the history, and if you do too, there's plenty of books out there to study it. Thanks, Larry.
Thank you, Larry K. Hanayeta R., your turn.
Okay, thank you, Leah, always for your service. Harlan, it's always a pleasure to listen to you, and I love your history lessons.
Thank you.
I have a yes or no question real quick. Is the name of this topic of it today, was it's summertime, so what's the question? Is that the...
Yep,
yes,
that was the name of it.
Okay.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So I'm going to ask you a question about the summer times. Because for me, summer is very, it's different because I don't work in the summer.
Okay.
So there are differences and stuff. So why, so what's the question about summer? Why would summer be different?
Because
we
do a question and answer in January. The
mm-hmm.
last few years we've done questions and answers on the very first Sunday of the year. I hope we'll continue to do that coming up in January. And we do one in the summertime. That's the only significance of it. There's nothing different about summer. There's nothing spectacular about summer. We could have called it June 15th questions and answers, and it wouldn't have made a difference.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
All righty, thank you. Yep, thank you, Hanayeta R. Okay, Kelsey R., your question, please. Kelsey R., star one to unmute.
Sorry, I was unmuted, but I had to press star one again. Okay, sorry about that. Okay, so I'm Kelsey R. So, Harlan, thank you for doing this. Leah, thank you for leading us. In this Q&A, so my question is this. So the big book teaches that faith without works is dead, right? Yeah, in just a minute. Okay, so my question is this. How do we encourage sponsees to shift from an intellectual exercise to a spiritual exercise? How do you do that with your sponsees?
The way I do that with my sponsees is to bring them through the steps as quickly as I can. And when we are working the steps, we go through phases of recovery. Now, I have been in these rooms a long time, and I have 26 years of abstinence, which doesn't qualify me as anything. But here is what I experienced. During the first several years of my travels through abstinence, the entire march was like, don't eat, go to meetings, don't eat, go to meetings. And that was what I did for a long time. And the scale was my report card. The scale was my report card. And however I was doing on the scale became the barometer of the quality of my recovery. That comes to an end at a point where you are at a relatively healthy weight. What starts to happen at that point is I started to become aware of certain defects and behaviors, and I'm still becoming aware of things. I'm still growing and changing and healing and developing as a human being. I started realizing how selfish I am. Not how selfish I was, how selfish I am. How self-seeking, dishonest, afraid, and resentful I am. And how these five character defects putrefied my life beyond what I could see in the food. Because the only thing that I could really see was that I needed to lose weight. But I thought, well, I'm a good person, I'm just fat. And I am a good person. I am a good person. Just because I have character defects does not mean that I'm a bad person. It just means I'm a human being, because we all have character defects. Every single person, whether they're addicted or not, has character defects. Well, here's the answer to your question. Not only did I become more and more aware of how these character defects were starting to putrefy my life, I got more in touch as every day, every week, every month, and every year passed of the munificence, the benevolence of my God. I started to become more aware of how God works in my life. And as I started to heal in other areas and became less manipulative, as I started to become less judgmental, as I started to become less selfish, as I started to really appreciate that I was born with an idea in my head that the success of others was my failure. The failure of others was my success. As those things started to change, I grew closer and closer to a true faith and companionship with God. And that process continues today. I am not an atheist. I am not an agnostic. I do have pockets of agnosticism. Why was the chapter written, We Agnostics? Because I am not an agnostic. I accept the existence of a deity in my life. That doesn't mean you have to. That doesn't mean that's what's right for you. That's what's right for me. But pockets of agnosticism mean I want to control God. I want God to do my bidding, not that Rolls Royce. No, the Mercedes, the red Mercedes next to it. That one. That's the one I want. Instead of just living in an acceptance of what God wants me to bring, I have a perfectly good house. Yet I want another glorious dwelling. And this is the house God gave me. It's affordable. It's in a great neighborhood. I'm in a fantastic area here. I'm with people that I relate to. I'm close to my friends. This is a great house. So the pockets of agnosticism drive me away from God and drive me toward the food. I don't pick up the food because now I'm aware of these things and I have a spiritual toolkit, the 12 steps, to work on them. So as my recovery progresses, my relationship with God becomes closer and closer, and I'm more grateful. I'm more aware. I'm more imbued with the Spirit of God, and I become more in awe of His power. And as I see His power in my life, and I learn to rely on Him, now my works have faith. Faith without works is dead. And as somebody told me not long ago, works without faith is dead for me. I must keep God as the centerpiece of my recovery, or I'm in trouble. I hope that answers your question, Kelsey.
Thank you, Kelsey R. Next up, Merritt W.
Hi, thanks, Carolyn and Leah. Thank you so much for your service here. And it doesn't really matter what my question is. I'm sure Harlan is going to give me so much gold, which she already has in the answers here. But I've been in program since 2019, but came into Vision like 3 weeks ago and feel like a total newcomer. I feel like this is a fresh start. I'm brand new. What advice would you give to the newcomer?
The advice I would give to the newcomer is never stop seeking recovery. Make it the most important thing in your life, but don't make it the only thing in your life. Don't live to recover. Recover to live. Make recovery the focal point of everything you do, but do things like a normal human being. Go out. Go be with people. don't live to recover, recover to live. The other thing I would say to you is do not give up on a vision for you. A vision for you is the renaissance of OA. It is the rebirth of OA. There are people in recovery here in Vision, and maybe you are not in Vision anymore, whatever, who have been exposed to a pure, uncut, big book message because of a vision for you. Go to different meetings. See what works for you. What meetings work for you? What kind of things work for you? And don't ever forget to pass on what you have learned. It is your responsibility to pass on what you have learned. Nothing ensures immunity from drinking like intensive work with other alcoholics. And never, ever forget that you do not learn this program by absorbing spiritual information. You learn this program by transmitting spiritual information. So keep sponsoring, keep working hard, keep studying the big book. The big book will meet you where you are. When you're a newcomer, the words of the big book ring true to the newcomer. When you're not a newcomer, the words of the big book will ring true to the not newcomer. Don't quit 5 minutes before the miracle. Don't stop. And you will find a life beyond your wildest imagination. There will be times you will cry, as I have cried, as all of us have cried. There will be times where your heart is breaking. But deep inside your soul, you will know where to go. You'll have the people to go to. You'll have a God to go to. You'll have a program to work. And this will carry you through, especially your higher power. Will carry you through anything life throws at you. There will be nothing in your path that will defeat you. And live until you die. Live your life until you die. Do not stop living. Do not stop living. And this will get you there. But don't ever give up on a vision for you. It is the rebirth. It is the renaissance of OA. I hope that helps.
Thank you, Merritt W., for your question. Good morning, everybody. A great opportunity to pose questions this morning. Anything on your mind related to 12 Steps, Program of Recovery, the big book?
Colleen M.
Pose a question. Colleen M.
Lena C.
Carolyn
S. Deborah S.
Debbie D. Indiana.
Carolyn S.
Lena C.
Diana Wall.
Scottsdale, Arizona.
Who's in Scottsdale, Arizona?
From Indiana.
Scottsdale.
Daryl S. Scottsdale, Arizona.
Daryl S.
Diana Wall.
Philly. Laura. Colleen M. Elaine C. Daryl S.
Alexis F.
I don't know.
Alexis
S.
Mia
Dev J. Colorado.
Who's in Colorado?
Bev J. Bev short for Beverly.
Carolyn S. from New York.
Diana Y.
Okay.
Philly.
All right. Let's get started. I've got Colleen M., Elena C., Carol S., Laurel, Alexis S., Bev G, I believe, Carolyn S., and Diana Y. Let's get started with Colleen M., please.
No, she didn't hear me.
Hey, good morning. Colleen M. from Maryland. Thank you, everybody that's here doing service. Harlan, thank you for your time and your wisdom. I got on a little late, so if this has already been talked about, just let me know and I'll go back and listen. But I was curious to know your thoughts on, so I'm recovered, but not cured. And I know there's other people in the program that have lost sponsors along the way. And I was wondering what your thoughts are on the significance of having a sponsor or just other fellows in recovery that are recovered. I think I've heard you say you've had the same sponsor for many, many years. And that's not been my experience. So I just would like to know what your thoughts are about sponsoring, having
a
sponsor.
I have a sponsor. I am a sponsor. I believe that it is vital to have a sponsor. I know there are people who do not believe that. I disagree with that premise. I am a human being, and I don't care how long I've been in these rooms. There are going to be times when birds are going to have diarrhea, and it's going to fall on me. There are times when people are going to pull out in front of me in traffic. I don't care what the situation is. No matter how evolved my recovery gets, I will never rise above the level of a human being. And as a human being, a sponsor can provide something for me that I cannot provide for myself, and that is objectivity. And that objectivity is a vital component in my recovery. Without objectivity, I do not have any basis of looking squarely at something and seeing it for what it is. On page 72 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, in chapter 6, it simply says, in actual practice, we usually find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient. It is absolutely not possible for me to be in recovery without a sponsor. I also have a God squad. I have people who I contact every single day, and they give me feedback on things that are going on in my life. Now, in order for me to live a full recovered life, I have to be a sponsor. And it says on page 14 in Bill's story, my friend, and he is referring to Ebby Thatcher, had emphasized the absolute necessity. What is a necessity? Something which cannot be lived without. Of demonstrating these principles, what are the principles? The principles are the steps. When Bill refers to the principles, he's not referring to this thing that says the principle of this is hope and the principle of that is honesty. That came out after he was dead. That was a product of the 80s. I remember when all that stuff came out. He's talking about the principles as another word for the steps in all my affairs. Particularly was it imperative. What does imperative mean? It means important above all else. To work with others as he had worked with me. Faith without works was dead, he said. And how appallingly true for the alcoholic. For if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life, how do you do that? Well, the Big Book says, through work and self-sacrifice for others. He could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. If he did not work, he would surely drink again. If he drank, he would surely die. Then faith would be dead indeed. With us, it is just like that. So the book is telling me in many, many different spots that I must sponsor. Our friend in New Jersey, lady who we don't hear much from anymore, she said, if you're afraid to sponsor, you better be afraid not to, because you have a job to do, not you personally, Colleen, but all of us, to sponsor. Clancy Immisland, who I love as a speaker, I wish he was still alive, he's not, but Clancy Immisland said, I do not learn this program by absorbing spiritual information. I learn this program by transmitting spiritual information. My sponsees are my professors. They teach me more than I could ever learn at any university on the planet. And I'm not in the results business. I don't have to be the perfect sponsor. I'm not worried about results. If they don't recover, oh well, they don't recover. I'll do the best I can. I'm going to do the very best I can. I have to stop waiting for perfection, because perfectionism is fear and anger coming together to kill me. I don't have to be perfect. I don't have to think perfect. I just have to do the best I can to transmit my message to another person. And if they recover, then that's great. If they don't, next. It's not up to me. I'm not in the results business. So resoundingly, yes, I have a sponsor. Yes, I have a God squad. And yes, it's imperative to be a sponsor. And I don't care how long I've been in this program, I will contact my sponsor every single day. I hope that helps, Colleen.
Thanks, Colleen M. Elena C.
Good morning. Good morning, Leah. Thank you for your service. Harlan, I want you to know that I am so happy you were born. This world is a better world because you are in it, and you're one of my positive role models, male role models. And I appreciate the piece of history. I echo others. It's very healing for me to know how much self-sacrifice. But anyway, my question to you, because it's something that I struggle with, is how do you find God's will in what's happening in the world today with all this unrest and people killing each other and bombing each other? And I just...
You know, there was many times in my life when I said to myself, I can't believe in God. My family was murdered. My father was the sole survivor of a large family. I am a survivor. He was a survivor of people that were killed. I am the survivor of a survivor. How can I live in a world where there was slavery in this country? How can I live in a world where there's prejudice and hatred? How can I live in this Meshuggah world? Well, I have to understand something. There are two wills in this world. There's God's will, and then there's human will. Every single headline and every single thing, from the Trail of Tears to slavery to the Holocaust to what's going on in our newspapers today, is human will. God doesn't tell people to hate one another. God doesn't tell people to kill one another. God doesn't tell people to abuse one another. But people do. Humans do. And when someone is violated, raped, someone is molested, someone is beaten, someone is abused, God is crying too. God is crying too. He doesn't want those things to happen. He doesn't put in the Bible, or what you would call the Old Testament, or I would call the Torah, or the New Testament. He doesn't put in their own beat somebody up, or he doesn't put in these things, go kill somebody. He didn't put that in there. He tells you not to. He tells you, thou shalt not kill. So there's two wills in this world. There's God's will, and then there's human will. But if I have human will in the newspaper, I know, I believe that God's will ultimately prevail. Will there be people that are going to die? Unfortunately, yes. I wish I had an explanation or a remedy for that. But here's what I learned along the way, Elena. My eating candy does not do anything to alleviate their suffering. If you could come to my house today in Scottsdale, Arizona, and convince me that me eating a chocolate cupcake would bring back one person from the Holocaust, one person from slavery, one person from the Trail of Tears, one person from the abuses that man has set upon other men, I'll do it. I'll be damned if I'm going to eat because of human will. I am not, by eating, helping any one of those people of the 6 million. I am not helping one slave to be free. God doesn't want me to die, too. I'll be damned if I'm going to let Hitler kill one more Jew. I'll be damned if I'm going to eat because of that. He's not getting me. He's not getting me. My family was killed a long time before that. They were killed over 100 years ago. That's not even the point. How is me eating going to alleviate human suffering? And the answer is, it's not. It's an excuse. It's not a reason. And it's a lousy excuse. I hope that answers it. I could go on and on and on about this, but I'm not going to in the interest of time. So that's my explanation on that. I hope that helped. Thanks, Elena, for the question.
Thank you, Elena.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Okay.
Daryl S., and then we have a Deborah. Daryl S., and then Deborah. Go ahead, Daryl.
Good morning, Harlan.
Good morning, Daryl.
Thank you so much. There are seasons and a rhythm in life, and there are seasons and a rhythm in recovery. Can you expound on that for us?
I'm not sure that I'm getting the question. You want me to expand on the rhythm of life, the seasons of life? Well,
in recovery.
In recovery, okay. Well, there is a pink cloud period that many of us go through. We come in here and we are just ready to stick to our diet. And we may be working some steps or doing whatever it is we're doing. We're very enthusiastic. And then that can kind of wane out and fade. We have to keep doing it. The perseverance, the perseverance makes me or breaks me. In every day of life, there are winters and summers, falls and springs. Every single day of life. When I think about some of the conditions of life, you can get very down or you can get very up. I think that the medicine here is in the steps, but the medicine goes beyond the steps for me. I have to do a gratitude list every single day. I have to remember that I have a brand new car outside here that I paid cash for. I have to remember that I have a house and I have a roof over my head that keeps me cool in summer and warm in winter. I have to remember that 6 days a week I walk 3 miles a day. I didn't used to be able to get in and out of a car. I have to remember that I have a God that holds my hand. And I may be in tears over the death of people that I love. I may be in tears of a love that's lost or loves that are lost. Today's Father's Day. My daughter in Brooklyn, New York is not going to call me. I'm not going to hear from her. That's a tragedy too. But I have people that I am going to hear from. I have people that I can love and that love me back. I have a life that works. So in every day, not just every so often in recovery, there are times when I could talk myself into eating chocolate because I can compare and despair. But I have to use what's at my feet. Sponsorship, the steps, step 10, 11, 12, all of the steps, gratitude lists, meetings. And I don't go to a meeting as a grumpy grumpapus. I go to a meeting to transmit a message. We're taught on page 153. Bring your mess to the sponsor. Bring your message of hope to the meeting. And in giving people positive words, positive behaviors, it's contagious to myself. So if I want positive, I have to transmit positive. If I want negative, I can get negative too. I choose the positive for today. I hope I will again tomorrow too. Thanks, Daryl, for the question. I hope that helped.
Thank you, Daryl S. Deborah. Is there a Deborah?
Hi, this is Deborah.
Yes.
This is Deborah S.
Hi, can you hear me?
Harlan, you're a true inspiration to me. Can you let everyone know about your upcoming retreat?
Oh, Yeah, I have a retreat coming up that I'm going to be doing here in Phoenix. It's the 8th, 9th, and 10th of August. If you want information on that, come to the Scottsdale meetings. We meet at 5:30 p.m. Sunday through Friday. I also do a big book study where you can learn about that every Saturday morning. There's a link to our meetings at scottsdalebigbook.com. That's scottsdalebigbook.com. And then I will also be at the convention in Newark in November, and I'm hoping that you all will come to that. That is going to be an outrageously fantastic convention. The OA birthday coming up in January. I wouldn't miss that for the world. So these things are very medicinal. They are they're like elixirs to my soul. I am a convention and retreat junkie, to say the least. Thanks, Deborah, for the question.
Yes, thank you. Okay, Laurel, your turn. Star one to unmute. Laurel.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Leah, for your service. Mm-hmm. And Harlan, I just had a question. I've had a lot of loss in my life this year, too. Lost my best friend, my counselor of 30 years, and a couple years ago I lost my sister and my mom. Do you have any suggestions for people who are going through loss to recover?
Yes.
Anything?
It's good to hear you, Laurel. Thank you. And my best to your husband as well, Bill. Laurel, the only thing I've ever learned that ever helped me is to help other people going through the same thing. Seek out other people who have had losses. When you hear someone on the line that has lost a mom or lost a friend, call that person. We have a phone list. It's on a Vision For You, AVISION, the number 4, YOU.info, AVisionForYou.info, for those who don't know. There is a membership list. You will have a drop-down thing. Click on that. Look up the person that just shared that they lost a child, God forbid. They lost a parent. They lost somebody. Go give comfort to them. And by comforting them, it brings me comfort. Remember what Clancy taught us. We do not get this program by absorbing spiritual information. We get it by transmitting spiritual information. So if I transmit grief recovery, if I transmit these various things, it comforts them and it comforts me. And I hope that that answers it, Laurel. Great to hear your voice, Laurel. Thank you for calling in today.
Thank you, Laurel. Alexis F., your question, please.
Alexis.
Star one to unmute, Alexis. All right, perhaps we'll circle back to Alexis. Bev J, star one to unmute.
Are we being heard out there?
I think we are, Harlan.
I think so, too, yeah.
Yes, you are.
Yes, okay. All right. Thank you for the comment.
You are loud and clear.
Okay,
thanks. Okay. Carolyn S. Your turn. Carolyn S.
Yes, hi. This is Carolyn S. Hi, this
Go
is Carolyn S.
Your question. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Your question.
Yes, my question. Harlan said that you do multiple step 10s every day. You said that. How, for lack of a better word, how big are these? Like, do you do them on the spot also if possible, or do you kind of save them up to the end of the day? Because I know.
Oh, no, I don't save anything up to the end of the day. It says right in the step, we discuss it with someone immediately. It doesn't say save it to the end of the day. I follow the instructions on page 84. I make a call. I talk about it with somebody. It says discuss it with someone at once. And then I do my step 10s. They take 3 minutes. And then if I've harmed anyone, I'll make an amends. You you know, whatever it is I need to do, but it's a very fast process. It's nothing that's written. It's nothing that's elaborate or protracted. It's a very, very brief, easy-to-follow process, and word for word on page 84. And if you go to page 84, I actually did an entire special edition. It's called God's Cold Shower. It's on this step, but it's in the archives, I guarantee you. It says, continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear on page 84. Just follow what it says, do what it says, and you'll be just fine. It's not anything I save to the end of the day. It's something I take care of immediately.
Thank you, Carolyn.
This is Bev J. Can I ask my question now?
Why not?
Go ahead, Bev. Yes.
Okay. Thank you so much. I don't know what happened to my phone. Anyway, my question is, what is our responsibility to members who stop attending meetings?
What is your responsibility to sponsors who stop attending meetings?
What is our responsibility to members who stop attending meetings? We may not be sponsoring them, but we notice that they're not coming to meetings anymore.
Well, it's not up to me to decide who should come to meetings. I may give them a call, and if they seem unresponsive or uninterested, I leave them alone. I leave them alone. And if in a worst-case scenario, I get my tuchus to Al-Anon, because if someone else's recovery is more important to me than it is to them, I am in the Al-Anonic condition. So
right,
if someone
right,
has
yeah.
is not coming to meetings anymore and they have expressed no desire to come back to meetings, lusum gain, which means leave them alone. Lusum gain means leave them alone. And the food will either beat them back into the meeting or it won't. It's up to God. It's up to the food. It's up to the hell of the disease. But if someone's not coming to meetings anymore, lusum gain. Call them, absolutely. Hey, it's Bev. I notice you're not at the meeting anymore. Is there something I can do? If they're unresponsive, love them gain. Leave them alone. Leah?
Thank you, Bev, for the question. All right, Diana Y. Diana Y, your turn. Star 1 to unmute.
Alexis F. Either way.
Alexis F. Diana Y. Alexis
or either.
F.
Either one. First one up.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, great. I went and asked my question, and I didn't know you couldn't hear me. But, Harlan, when you have a new sponsee, this is twofold. How do you help them to get even one day of abstinence, and how do you help them to get a higher power?
I help them get one. Is this Alexis or Diana? No, this
Diana.
Can't be Alexis. This is Diana. Okay, I know Alexis's voice. Okay. Diana, the way I help them is to support them as best I can and to constantly remind them that if they feel like going into the food, to call me instead or call anyone and talk about it. What was the other question that you asked? How do I help them through day one? And what else were you asking? I'm sorry. Diana? You asked another part of the question, and now I've forgotten it. Okay, well, how I get them through day one is to just support them as best I can.
Can you hear me, Harlan?
Yes, I can. Okay. What was the other part of your question? Because I get a little fabungia, too.
No, how do you help them to get a higher power that will take away the obsession and craving for food?
All I can do is share with them how that happened for me. When I came in here, I was very angry at God. He made me a fat kid. God took my mother away when I was a young boy. My mother died when I was 22, but essentially she was lost to me when I was much, much younger than that, because my mother was very sick physically and very sick mentally. My dad was old. He was an immigrant. He never made much of a living, and I was mad at God. You know, my dad, he didn't speak the language, and, you know, he was just scared to death. He was just scared to death. And, you know, I'm growing up in this. We were always a flat tire away from homelessness and so on. So you have to, it takes time, but it takes work. Here is what I tell them in terms of a relationship with God. You have to work at this every day. And the way you work at a relationship with God is not to put all kinds of human anger and human emotions on God. God is pure love, pure benevolence, pure love and generosity, that there's not a mean or vindictive part of God. God's not out to get you. God's not out to screw you over. But that takes time, and it takes work. And I encourage them not to worry about that right now when they're brand new. You just stay out of the food. That's our first job. You don't have to be a theologian to put the food down. You don't have to have smicha and become a rabbi to put the food down. You don't have to be a priest or a minister or whatever it is. You don't need to do that to put the food down. You put the food down, and then we'll worry about the development of step two, because we're going to work on that together for the rest of our lives. As we grow in recovery, we start, as I mentioned this before, we start to heal in areas we didn't even know were broken. And as you help others and others help you, your relationship with God will deepen and become richer and richer and richer. And you will come to love God in ways you never knew were possible. By expressing your gratitude, by helping others and having others help you, you will be amazed before you are halfway through. So let's not get ahead of ourselves. You talked about a newcomer. Let's put the food down. All we need to do when we work step two at the beginning is, or even at the end, is do you believe or are you willing to believe that there is a power greater than yourself? That's the starting point. That's the starting point. Do you believe, or are you even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than yourself? Because if you're going to sit there and tell me that you created the sun and the stars and the five great lakes, now we have a problem. Now we have a bit of a problem. So we're going to start with very simple. Do you believe, page 47, do you believe, or are you willing to believe, that there is a power greater than yourself? And if you believe that, if you're willing to believe that there's a power greater than you, we're on our way. The rest of it will be taken care of. And I hope that helps, Diana. Thank you.
Thank you, Diana Y.
Mm-hmm. We still have time for a few more questions.
Alexis, we have Alexis F. that's still out there.
Debbie D.
I'm from New Jersey.
Margaret D. Georgia.
Mary F.
Mia B.
Okay, let's stop there. First, let's call out to Alexis F. Alexis F. Okay, let's assume she's not there. Debbie D., your question, please. Debbie D.
Can you hear me?
Yep, now we can.
Yes.
Okay, sorry. Harlan, I didn't know if you could expand just a little bit on the conference you're doing. What are you speaking about? I didn't know if you could share who you were speaking with. I didn't know if you could just
talk. Are you talking about the retreat, or are you talking about the convention? I'm just one of the speakers. I'm not the retreat.
The retreat.
the retreat. We're going to be talking about the steps in recovery. The title of it is Relapse or Recovery, The Choice is Yours. I'm going to invite you to contact me offline in the interest of time, because we're getting close to the end here. I'll give my contact information at the end of this, and I will give you everything you desire on that retreat, I promise you. But I'm just going to ask you to sort of defer until the end.
Okay.
Thank you, Debbie B.
Thank
you.
Pushing the clock here.
Yeah, questions about the big book, questions about 12-step recovery, please.
Step A.
Ted,
Margaret D. Ted, go ahead. Ted from New Jersey, then Margaret D., please.
Thank you so much. Thanks for moderating. Thanks for speaking. My question is, and I don't mean to be personal about this, you don't have to answer it, but I also lost about a lot of weight, and I have dead skin, sagging stomach, and I was just wondering, what did you do, because you lost quite a amount of weight, and actually the body, you know, gets kind of deformed. So did you have any surgery?
Could
you elaborate on how your experience with what that was, please?
Very painful, not easy. I could use a lot more surgery. If I wanted to pour about another $100,000 into my surgeries, it would be fine. But people who have lost an incredible amount of weight are going to have physical vestiges of the disease that are going to have to be dealt with. I could actually use more plastic surgery. I'm very reticent to do that. But I'm actually going to, Ted, I'm going to invite you to contact me offline. I'm going to give my contact information at the end of this. I'm going to ask you, in the interest of time, to contact me personally, and I will be glad to talk to you about it. But, yes, I've had plastic surgery twice, yes.
Thank you, Ted. Margaret
Thanks, Ted.
D., your question, please. Margaret D. Star one to unmute.
That does help, doesn't it, to unmute? Hey, everybody.
Yes.
Kind of a quick question. In being a passionate person, Harlan, have you ever gone through the experience that Bill Wilson did about where he was dragging people off the bar stools? You know, you're getting your butt in recovery right now, whether you like it or not, and I'm going to do this. Have you ever gone to that extreme, and how'd you get balanced?
No, I've never done it. No, I've wanted
to
do it. I've wanted to do it. I have a friend of mine that lives in the Bay Area. He is a dear, dear soul. He was the best man at my wedding. I love him. He loves me. He's 400 pounds. I would love to drag him by the neck. He's had two heart attacks. He's diabetic. He's probably in as bad a shape physically as anybody I've known, and I'd love to drag him into recovery. He thinks recovery is the dumbest, stupidest thing he's ever heard of in his life. He wouldn't be caught dead in an OA meeting, and he is dying right before our eyes. His entire life is eating and working and watching sports on television. That is his entire life. Yes, I've wanted to. No, I haven't done it.
Thank you, Margaret D.
Thank you.
Mary F., your turn. Mary F., our one to unmute.
Good morning, everybody, and thank you, Harlan and Leah, for your service. Mary F., compulsive overeater from Florida. Harlan, is there a favorite or a significant spiritual experience that you can recall from your years of recovery?
Oh, wow. Well, my favorite spiritual experience is I haven't compulsively overeaten in 26 years. My favorite spiritual experience is I woke up this morning. My favorite spiritual experience is I was able to pray to a God that I know loves me this morning. My favorite spiritual experience is being here doing service for A Vision for You. My favorite spiritual experience is the gratitude that I feel to Leah M., Melanie C., Amy G., Katie F., and of course, our beloved Roseanne S. Roseanne is the founder of OA, and Leah and Melanie, Amy G., and Katie F. are the people who keep Vision going, started it and keep it going. The sun never sets on the service that these people have done. I am in debt to them forever. I will never be able to repay the debt that I owe these people. My favorite spiritual experience is that as I face Father's Day, and I will not hear from my daughter today, nor my grandchildren, they're in Crown Heights, Brooklyn, New York, or Crown Point, or Crown Heights, I think it's Crown Heights, it's Crown something, Crown Heights, I think, Brooklyn. I'm not going to hear from them today. My heart is in a thousand pieces because of that. But I have a place to go where I am loved, and I love them, and that's OA. I have a purpose and a mighty rhythm that underlay all. On page 45 of the big book, it tells me why I was born. It says, the main object of this book is to help you find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. And if it's the main object of this book, it damn well better be the main object of my life. And those are the spiritual awakenings of my life that keep me going, that are my favorites. And there is nothing above service to God. I hope that helps.
Thank you, Mary F.
Harlan, what was that page that you just said?
Page
about
45
the
of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is the thesis line of the big book of AA. The thesis line is the line that encapsulates all of it. It says very simply, the main object of this book is to help you find a power greater than yourself which will solve your problem. And on page 77 it says, my real purpose is to be of maximum service to God and the people about me. They are intertwined. They are very married. We have time for whatever we have time for. Let's move on. Because we're getting close.
Is there a Maya B? Mia B? Maya B? I couldn't catch it perfectly. For one time,
Mia
you.
B?
Can Mia you B, me? You're up.
Yes. Hi, yes. Go good ahead. Morning. Thank you so much, Harlan. I understand the formula for addressing resentment. Though with shame, I get stumped on that one. Either shame for my own behaviors or from when someone else will bring something up from the past that I've long, you know, I think I've grown out of. Can you help me with that, please?
Keep working the steps, and what you will find is there are two permanent relationships that you have with in life, two. The one with yourself and the one with God. I have a lot of shame. A lot of shame. I did shameful things with money. I drove without insurance. I've had my car repossessed twice. I've done a lot of shameful things. And I'm embarrassed at some of the tall tales I told. I'm embarrassed by certain things. You know, I was so fat and so on. As you start to realize that you are human, as you start to realize that all people have done these kinds of things, you start to realize that no matter how evolved my recovery gets, I will never rise above the level of a human being. Of a human being. I'm human, and that's why I did these things. It's not because I'm bad. It's not because I'm stupid. And the other thing I have to divorce myself from is what other people are thinking about me. You know what most people are thinking about me 99 9/10% of the time? Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. I am not the focal point of what they're thinking about. And when I can divorce myself from that, it helps me. You didn't wake up thinking about me, nor did I wake up thinking about you, but here we are. And I'm not going to be thinking about you much after this thing is over, and you're not going to be thinking about me. So whatever we've done that we're ashamed of, is really within our own heart. And when I accept that I am human, with all its inherent frailties, I can come to peace with these things. I'm a human being, and that's what I am. I hope that helps. Leah?
Thank you so much. Yes, thank you. And thank you to all who posed questions this morning. And, of course, thank you so much, Harlan, for your time, your energy, your passion, carrying a message of depth and weight day in and day out around the globe. Thank you. We appreciate you. And we're going to close now. First, I'll tell you that the share ID number for today's presentation, 22,525. That's 22525. We are going to close now from page 164. It's found in a chapter entitled A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.